So one of the things that I'm hearing with all of these gentlemen is such different experiences during the war. And I when we watched, some of these guys all came in backstage about an hour before the we began, and they sat down and they all started talking together. And I wonder if you have questions for each other or comments for each other. I know you believe that they may have escorted you out of Italy and things like that. Do you have anything you'd like to say to each other that you mind sharing in front of us?
What?
You get to talk to us all the time. Do you have questions for each other? Well, the belief is that these gentlemen may have escorted you during the war.
Yep. Wasn't for those guys. We wouldn't have made it.
The red tails.
That's what she was asking.
Yeah, the red tails.
Yeah, yeah. How did you respond when you found out that these fellows were going to sit with us tonight?
Oh, great.
How did you feel? Great. Got along well.
Well, good. Matt, did you have any other questions that we didn't get to for you?
Jack, there was... I was reading some information about you. You had a term that you said the Dutch had for the V1s.
Do I what?
When I was reading some information about you, you mentioned a term I think the Dutch had for the V1s, the flying bombs.
Oh, Fliegerbom.
Yeah, that's it.
Fliegerbom. The Dutch would come and talk to us during the day, and they say, "Come and Fliegerbom, Fliegerbom." Well, they were just as scared as we were of them, because when the shrapnel came, it didn't pick out just us guys. It came all over. And you'd be surprised how much shrapnel was in one of them bombs. And all they had to do was hurt somebody or blow a gas tank or something, and they were out of commission. So, yeah, that was a great invention. And you got to hand it to them Germans. They had some pretty good equipment, but didn't have the manpower, they didn't have the fuel. Their first pilots were super pilots. And when they got bumped off, well, the young guys couldn't handle it. That was to our advantage then.
Very good.
They'd miss us. Later in war, they'd strafe us, but they'd miss us. They'd strafe, if you're on the road, they'd be off the road and, well, they were young kids. They shot some down, and they, you know.
But you never saw your enemy face to face, right?
No, we never saw him face to face.
One of the very crucial parts of air war is that you seldom ever see your enemy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
face to face.
I felt so bad that we killed.
You know they're there.
Yeah.
They make their presence known. Implicitly on that fact, but you never really see them face to face. And another thing that may seem strange to many is that our losses, when a comrade was shot down, all we saw was an empty bunk. We had no memorial service, we had no burial service, or funerals. We went on and on and on as if nothing had happened.
Mm-hmm.
A lot had happened.
Right.
Believe me. But I get often asked, how in the world do you psych yourself up to get back in that airplane the next day after you've been out on a mission and failed to bomb the target? You know you're going to have to go back. And believe me, we did have those who cracked.
Yeah.
That the psychological impact of having to do that and knowing you had to do that day after day after day was more than some could bear.
Right. And so few of the men came home that you went over with.
Well, exactly. And those who did were just incredibly lucky. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is if you survived as we did, it was just pure dumb luck. Call it what you will, no matter how well you performed or didn't perform. If you were in the wrong place at the wrong time, you didn't come home.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's
sure.
I was privileged last month to participate in Savannah, Georgia at the 8th Air Force Museum Memorial Service, Memorial Day Service, where they planted 26,000 48 star flags for each member of the 8th Air Force that did not come home.
Wow.
That was a memorable, memorable experience.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's key, and I think that's why we're all here, right? To hear your stories, to learn from you while you can and while you're willing to share them with you. And then for us to carry on their stories and to remember these stories that you're sharing and the stories that you're sharing of those who didn't come home. And,
exactly.
And I think that's the duty of all of us to carry that on. So thank you all.
They should never, ever be forgotten.
I agree. Now, we are quite privileged not only to talk to these gentlemen, but they have agreed to take some questions at the end. And we have, we call it the voice of God, but it's really Chris Henry of the EAA. And Chris, you were going to ask some questions for us that we'd gotten from the audience, both streaming and live.
Absolutely. Thank you. One of the questions we received for the airmen on stage, did your aircraft have a name? And if so, why was it named that?
Ooh, good question.
My aircraft was named Kitten. It happened to be my wife's nickname, but I also said that my crew chief was keeping that engine purring like a kitten, so put it on both sides.
Did any of the rest of you have named airplanes?
Oh, yes.
Go ahead.
Several different names.
Names that you can say in public with a mixed age audience.
My first airplane was Sunny, S-U-N-N-Y, that the pilot had named for his son. The second, afterward, that plane was lost by another crew. The next plane we got was Sunny 2. And that often took place through the course of your tour. In my 25 mission tour, I used up 6 airplanes.
Oh, God.
6 B-17s. At that time in 1943, a B-17 cost $254,000. So I used up over $1 million worth of equipment.
And you're worth it. We're glad they brought you home.
Another way to put it. But it was customary to have nose art on the nose of a B-17. In many cases, in some, we flew unidentified or not unnamed aircraft because they were replaced so often. Mm-hmm. But the names were meaningless in the long run because it did not really mean that the crew who made that or put that name on the plane flew it, mm-hmm. particularly when it was lost. That happened more frequently than not.
Mm. How interesting. What about some of the rest of you?
Don, the Hellcat that's here has a name, but it's not one that you gave it. That's correct?
That's right. Yes, B-17 We had this used Hellcat come aboard the aircraft carrier, and it had the nose art on it, death and destruction, and skull and crossbones on it. And of course, that's not normal for aircraft carriers, because hardly anybody has their own spatial plane. Maybe the division leader, not the division leader, but the leader of the whole group, you know, might have his in some cases. But because of space on the carrier, you don't have room to have everybody have their own spatial plane, and so you fly whatever number is parked, you know, in the sequences you're to take off on. And so we kind of wondered, you know, who put that name on there, and it ended up the three of us ensigns flew it from time or two, and the one time that I remember that I flew it was May the 24th of 1945. And of course, the reason I remember it, that's day before my birthday. So I had something, you know, to pace it, to remember it by. But we later on, just a year or so ago, I threw some of the secret-y stuff that has been released now. We were able to trace the viewer number on that plane. And it showed up in Pearl Harbor, in where they stock the airplanes, you know, to furnish to the fleet. But then it went to the island of Guam, and I'm guessing, and I'm pretty sure, that that's probably where the nose art, you know, got put on it. And then it came to us in, I think, first part of April. And it stayed with us on the Essex for about 3.5 months. And then I don't know why, but for some reason or other, it was taken back off and returned to Pearl Harbor. And then that's as far as we could trace it. So apparently it maybe was junked or at least discontinued being used.
Very good. What about you other gentlemen? Did you have names on your planes or favorite planes? Did you have names?
Well, I like to say that every pilot didn't have a plane.
Yeah.
You know, they have more pilots than planes in the squadron. And the planes are owned by the older pilots. I was a young pilot and second lieutenant came in. And I flew 21 missions, but the first few missions I flew in maybe a C model one day, a D model the next day. Mm-hmm. And then a fellow in the squadron who had flown his missions and could have gone home became one of the ops officers. And one day he said, "Hardy, do you want to fly my airplane?" I jumped at the chance. So whenever my name went on a board, he put his airplane, A-33, beside my name. Tall in the Saddle was the name. I don't know who named it that, but Wendell Lucas thought it was still his airplane, but I knew it was mine now. And my last 11 missions, I flew in that airplane.
That's terrific.
Tall in the Saddle.
Tall in the Saddle. Very good.